Hello, magic seekers, and welcome to It Turns Out She's a Witch.
We're your hosts, Laura and Shannon,
and welcome to our podcast coven.
Turns Out She's the Witch podcast would like to begin today by acknowledging the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which we live and record the podcast. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello to our dearest podcast coven. We are delighted to be back in your ear holes this week. We have another of our favourite repeat guests on the podcast today who we always love to chat with and learn from. Our guest established the online business, The Spiritual Toolbox, in 2016 and opened her store in Hurstville in 2022. She's become a trusted source of ethically produced metaphysical items, witchcraft tools and practitioner-made products. She is a qualified metaphysical practitioner, aromatherapist and astrologer, and someone who is absolutely brimming with esoteric and occult wisdom. Please welcome back to the podcast, Rhiannon Hajim. Thank you so much for joining us again.
I just got goosebumps. Oh, I love this. I'm so excited to be back.
Oh, as Laura said off air, we could just have you on every single week.
Yeah, we just said just stay here.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah,
sounds like fun.
You love it. I think so too. Now, we adore having you on the podcast, Rhi, and picking your brain. And I think this is interview number 4 with you.
Yes, it is.
Now, we have a very intriguing subject to talk about today. But before we delve in, I would love to know, are you team Oracle cards or team tarot and why?
Okay, I am absolutely hands down, without a doubt, team tarot. Ooh. So I just feel like there's a wider scope of application and understanding because there's a very specific structure to a tarot deck. Like you've got the majors, the minors, the reversals, numbers, the suites. It's just like incredibly diverse but also experimental in how you work with it, whereas Oracle cards, I feel like they're like the love and light of the community. Although there are some really well-made decks, there aren't enough well-made decks, so people are using it for divination but they're not getting a full spectrum. I just feel like there's a downside to that.
Yeah, it's a good point. It is a very good point.
But there are, like, there absolutely are really fantastic decks, like, that are Oracle that do cover both lightness and darkness and all of that. But there are far and few between.
You're a tarot gal.
Yes.
I love it. And it is true. I think a lot of people maybe steer clear of tarot because they are a bit scared about what can come up in the cards because,
yeah,
you know, there's some really no bullshit cards, that's for sure. Where you're like, oh God, okay, that's going to happen.
It's like, and the tower, the five of cups, yeah. It's just like, oh no.
Yeah.
And the extra rules and the extra sort of background knowledge you need to kind of be aware of before you can really. Yeah.
They can be intimidating, absolutely. And that's, you know, the downside to people that want to work with tarot but don't know how is they feel like it's totally out of their league.
And just a totally off the cuff question, do you teach tarot at all, like within your
online
space?
I do on Patreon. Yeah, I do. Not actually, you're the second person that's asked me like in the last few days.
Ooh,
I did start a segment and then I didn't continue it. So this is my sign that I need to continue it.
Yes, please do.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people. I've dabbled, but I feel like I don't have the depth of knowledge yet to really get into it and understand. Yeah, and all the different spreads. Like, there's so much to it.
But people, humans, like to overcomplicate things. So you've got to just get into it and really feel the waters and then adapt as you go. Like how I read tarot now is not how I read it 10 years ago. But I needed to read it, even if it was in such a really superficial way back then, in order to build the grounds in which I read it now.
Makes sense.
Oh, I love that.
Just do it. Just start. Just like do it. Yeah.
I think I need to. And it's funny that you were saying you just had a sign. This is probably my sign to like get out of my own way and just start experimenting with it.
Yeah.
For sure.
And if any of our listeners are curious and want to know more, then inbox Ree and ask her if she teaches tarot. Sorry, that was horrible of me.
No, but like sometimes I do need that push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to read the room, don't you?
Exactly.
Pardon the pun. I have a quick question too before we jump in.
Okay.
We've had many requests lately in regards to advice on personal energy protection. Mm-hmm. What do you feel lowers our protective field and what can we do to increase it?
Okay, this is such a great question because I like to think of our own energy protection in the same lens that we do with physical hygiene. So I think that it's something that should be done regularly to keep like the energetic or psychic debris from accumulating on us. Like we wash our hands all the time. So like I just think that we are more than just a physical self. So we also need to like wash our energetic self. Mm-hmm. And so things that would lower our protective field or lower our vibration would be things like, you know, partaking in gossip, arguments, consuming alcohol or drugs or having poor eating and sleeping habits, working in stressful conditions, being sick, working too much, being in crowded places, or even just being around the wrong people because we are consuming their energy, the people that we surround ourselves with. So even also the clothing that we wear. So this is like something that I've been deep diving into. So there was a study. Yeah, there was a study done by a lady, Dr. Yellen or something along the lines of that. And so she actually measured the particles of fibers and measured the value in whatever it was. And so it was wool, linen, and cotton that had the highest vibrational frequency. But then like man-made like polyesters and rayons and all of that had really low vibrational energies. And I just think that's fascinating because back in the day everyone wore like linen or cotton or it was all natural fibers. But I think there was like a caveat that the fibers couldn't be blended. So it had to just be like pure linen or pure cotton in order to maintain the frequency. But don't quote me on that. This is just, like a late night deep dive I did.
Yeah. Sounds like one of those fun little rabbit holes. And it doesn't sound altogether unfamiliar. I think it might have been our trainers, Laws and Chloe, that have mentioned that in the past.
I think it's also messing in the Bible or the Torah or something about fibers being and I think that's what started her on this mission to measure. I don't know.
That could be a whole episode.
That could be a whole another episode. Part
amazing.
Five.
Yeah.
but to increase your own psychic protection would be to consciously cleanse your energy at all times, even when you're washing your hands. Just imagine everything you've touched just going down the drain, like all the energy that you picked up on, because our hands are frequency tools. Visualization, meditation, all the tools, all the things that you can use. But you also don't need anything if it's the conscious application of going, okay, I'm going to rid myself of anything that I've absorbed in my day and clearing the slate for a restful night's sleep. Or, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, it's just being conscious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. And I couldn't agree more. It's so important. It's easy to forget or overlook because you can't see that, but you can certainly feel it, right?
Yeah. That's it. And when you do, like, wake up and you've got, like, aches and pains from reasons not known to you, that could be a sign that energetic accumulation has happened within your body. Like we've got like a stagnation or a sort of like, I don't like to say this, but like an evil eye attack on you or whatever that means to you, like a negative projection aimed at you, especially the back of your neck. That's usually the first point of like attack.
Some sort of interference.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, good to be aware of. It's like the back of my neck. It's actually my shoulder. Just got sorer.
Well, it's funny, the psychic protection oil that I always have from you that you create, that is where I put it every single morning. As soon as I get out of the shower, it's part of my ritual of like rolling that all over the back of my neck before I start my day.
Oh, so, I love that. That's so great.
But it's funny, like I didn't actually even know why I was doing it there. Like you could put it anywhere, but I'm like, yeah, back of my neck.
Yeah, well, my aunt's a shaman and she actually told me that there's a vertebrae that's susceptible for energetic attacks. And then she told me this years and years ago, but then the more books and research that come out definitely emphasize this spot as being a pivotal point of access.
Wow.
So it's something that I just tell everyone all the time, back of your neck.
Yeah.
I think also like it's out of our peripheral vision as well. So it makes sense.
It does.
Yeah,
for sure.
Love that.
Now let's delve into our first subject, which I'm very excited about. Can you share with us what an egregore is?
Okay, yes, I can. So, an egregore is a collective psychic entity. It's sort of like an ambient force that is created and sustained by the beliefs and practices and emotions and intentions of a group. So it is feeding and growing from the collective energy that of the people that hold that belief. So we can think of corporations having an egregore, sports teams, geographical locations, because it makes you feel a type of way, both positively and negatively, that matches with the collective mind or the hive mind of that place or brand or thing or team or whatever it is. So it's something that sort of creates itself from the shared belief of the vibe of the group. So an example I like to tell people is like the spirit of Christmas. That could be considered an egregore because everybody, not everybody, lots of people believe in this concept of a beautiful, magical Christmas and everything that that, you know, entails to bring a sense of belonging and identity, which then provides a structure for these collective beliefs to adhere to, thus creating the egregore.
It's like... a wordy concept, but my mind's just sort of spiraling away into thinking of all the different examples. There you go. I've intentionally not read up on any of this, so I feel like really brand new to everything we're chatting about.
That's so great.
Yeah. That's me. No idea. All right. So is a tulpa essentially the same thing as an egregore?
So I'm going to say no. So an egregore is the collective thought form created and sustained by the group, whereas a tulpa, on the other hand, is more of a personalized like ally or friend that we create from spiritual or mental energy. So it's a thought form. So yes, they're both thought forms, but one coexists with us, which is the tulpa, and one it coexists outside of us, but off our energy. And the thing with tulpas is they're a Buddhist belief system, and they are believed to even build upon their own consciousness to be independent of your or the creator's mind. Yeah, so it's sort of like a almost like a spirit guide situation where we've created an entity to help us with something.
And it ends up having its own processes. Well,
it can, yeah, it can end up having its own consciousness, like with sort of like a free will situation.
Gosh,
I had no idea.
Yes.
Now you do.
Yeah. You said that's from the Buddhist tradition.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Right.
I could just see your mind going, Laura, I love it.
It's just at what, you know, and it's going to be a really poorly worded question. So, but at what stage would somebody following that path create one? Is it, I can't imagine it would be like a beginner or?
Yeah, look, honestly, a lot of people create them from a point of either greed or necessity at some point in their path. Because they want to achieve a more they want more power, more growth, more this or that, or knowledge or whatever it is. A lot of it comes from those places. But those types of energies are really hard to feed because you need to sustain the energy, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, pure intentions, if you were, like, if I was to create a servitor, a tulpa, it would be for my home, to help protect my home and to help coexist within the dynamics of my home to bring me, I don't know, protection, peace, whatever.
Yeah. Safety style.
Yeah.
Okay. I like this.
Oh, and we're just begun.
Let's keep scratching.
Yes. Now, I would love your opinion on this. Do you feel that sometimes when a house is haunted, could it in fact be an egregore?
I think yes. I think in many situations where there are folklores and tales around specific haunted locations and how the stories get passed down and around, that could definitely create a belief by the collective.
Yeah.
Like even so much as like entities like Slender Man, whether or not that entity exists, it doesn't really matter. It's enough people believe in it, it becomes true.
Yeah.
So it's not always the case. But like, I would love to see a Ghost Adventures episode of them touching on this subject just once. It doesn't have to be a demon or a spirit of like someone that died millions of years ago. Let's just throw in another esoteric concept into the...
Yeah.
Let's confuse the shit out of everyone again.
Yes.
It's true though. Like I guess if you're going into a space where you know there's a white lady, then you're going to be feeling that, as you say, that collective energy, that collective fear of everyone that stepped into it thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to see this white lady.
Yes.
So does that create a white lady?
Exactly. And that's the argument that often goes in these circles is, are we actually experiencing a residual energy or is it an active presence?
Yeah.
And that's a whole other podcast.
Makes that's like sense. Number that's six right. with you.
Yeah, that's all right. Note it down, Shannon.
I shall. Well, that's how this one came to be. I think it was adding in one of the other episodes. And
Sounds like a... what came first, the chicken or the egg situation, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Or was the chicken an egregore of the egg? Yeah. Anyway.
Truly. It's like mind can't even fully compute that. My mind kind of freezes out halfway through going, huh? What? Huh? No. Now, you mentioned this word just a second ago, and I still have no blue clue, like I've already established. Can you share with us what a servitor is?
Okay, yes. So a servitor is a psychic thought form, just like an egregore and a tulpa, but it is created with a very specific purpose, distinct in its function. So it is created for a purpose, a task. It's given a command, and it exists so long as that purpose is required and the energy is fit. So it's very task-oriented and it's bound by the frameworks that you set and it is not like a conscious entity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. My kids and husband play Fortnite. I don't know if you're familiar with the game, but currently you can like land on this territory. It's like a shoot 'em up survivor game. Mm-hmm. And you can land on this territory and then you can find an AI helper. Yep. And then like you get, you know, you, I don't know, pay money or whatever it is. And then they follow you around and they're like extra eyes and they help you take everyone else out. It sounds like exactly.
Yeah,
it is.
Honestly, video games have that, like they have so much occult like symbology within it.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to play more games just to sort of see what is in, like Dungeons and Dragons. That's absolutely like created by an occultist. It has to work.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
It is. So now that you've explained egregores, tulpas, and servitors, how and more importantly, should we work with them in our magical practices?
Okay, so egregores are something that you may come across. You definitely have come across it at some point in your life. But unless it's a group situation, like creating an egregore for a coven that you're in, Egregores, well, you're not really creating it. It will exist off the belief, but it is best suited for like group and collective ritual works. But what the thing with egregores is you can actually consciously detach yourself from an egregore if you feel like it is overbearing or creating too much conflict in your life, because it will feed through your psychic senses. That's like the realm in which it exists. So if there is, you know, if there's an intention to strengthen a bond within a group or amplify collective intentions to achieve like common goals, then absolutely egregores are definitely up the alley of working with. But with servitors and tulpas, it's more personal. It is, you can use them for protection, information gathering, like really send them off into the astral and collect as much info as you can and bring it back to you. I've done that before. It was very interesting. And yet influencing circumstances. So the main difference between a servitor and a tulpa is the servitor is built by you with a specific purpose and intention, and it basically self-destructs once it's achieved that purpose or intention. And with a tulpa, it can take on that free will, but it can sort of open up doorways and problem solve without your involvement. But you can decommission it if you need to. But ideally, you've created an entity, therefore there needs to be reverence and respect, or you may get the shit under the stick there.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just thinking about, like in other, you know, folklore or belief systems about even like house spirits.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like you know, over in Scotland, and they believed that, you know, each home had a hearth spirit and you had to honour it, otherwise it would basically fuck shit right up. Like it would help you if you were, yeah, being respectful and leaving offerings and food and all of that. But then if you kind of forgot about it, then, you know, it's going to wreak havoc.
So that definitely sounds like a tulpa. Yeah, definitely does. It's fascinating. But yeah, so all of them require your sustenance and your energy. So they're always important considerations if you are thinking of creating one. How are you going to feed it? Whether it's with offerings or fruit or sexual energy or rituals, candles, you know, whatever.
And if you can sustain it, I guess, too, because you wouldn't want to like start one up and then forget about it and then all of a sudden God knows what happens.
That's like golems.
It's scary.
Like golems would be a – I've got one here. A golem would be like a servitor. It is created with an intention in mind, and once it's done its – served its purpose, you can deconstruct it. But it will exist so long as you feed it.
Wow. Offerings. So is that kind of like a poppet?
Almost, yeah. So, actually poppets could be a form of a tulpa. And there's actually a lady who create like her sole purpose in this life is to create these spirit dolls. And what she does is she creates them, she generates the energy to make them come alive, I guess, in a psychic sense. And then people buy them based off the intention in which she's created them. Some of them are for fertility, some of them are for abundance, protection, whatever. But the whole thing is you have to build a connection with it and sustain that connection through offerings.
Oh, it's fascinating. And it's something that's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years, like poppets and things like that. So
it's just a different name for a very similar process.
It is, isn't it?
Well, I guess that's fair enough when there's all different areas of the world that have similar practices, but it's known by a different name, but essentially the process is the same, right? So I have a curious question. If we've moved into a new home and are wanting to either connect with that guardian energy that's already there or invite our own in, what would you suggest this process look like?
So I first and foremost, and I tell everyone this, is to pay your respects to the spirits of the land. And this, especially considering we're in Australia, it can be done anywhere in the world, obviously, but we want to forge a positive connection with those who have walked before us. And in terms of like a guardian spirit or a familial spirit, it would be this really similar or even the same process of what I like to do is like my actual personal practice is I will invite, well, I'll invite the energy of their presence to join me. I like to do it outside just because I like to keep it separate from my internal home. Mm-hmm. Never know what I'm inviting inside. And explaining why I'm here and how I wish to create a favorable connection with them. And then I would offer, I generally light incense. And I'll brew like a fresh cup of tea and I'll pour that onto like a plant or a tree or something as a token of my appreciation. And just basically say like, I'm here and I would like your assistance and I would like to get to know you. And obviously maintaining that relationship in an ongoing manner. So like consciously, like if you're out in the garden, going like acknowledging their presence and saying, I'm still here. I hope you're going well. Like, you know, however you would, you know, maintain a mundane relationship is the same way that you would do an energetic one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Makes sense. It's very practical, isn't it? Doesn't have to be completely different to anything we're familiar with.
Yeah. Well, I know a friend of mine, she has a little statue at the front of her house and she just, like, that's her little spot where she pays her respects for the spirits of the land. And the statue doesn't really mean anything specific to her or the spirits. It's just that's her token to remember to pay her respects.
Her touchstone.
Yes, basically,
We've got the same kind of thing here on our land. We've got a particular tree and that's where, like, if I do any kind of ritual work, I'll take the offerings there. Or if I have a sister circle, the flowers from that circle get laid at the tree. So it's just this constant tokens of gratitude. And this tree is like insane. It has grown like incredibly over the last few years. Even my brother-in-law, who is an arborist, is like, what the fuck have you done to that tree? Because it's like crazy big and it's so symmetrical. Like the way it's grown, it's a gum tree, but it's just so beautiful. And I'm like, that's my magic tree. That's where all my offerings go. And he just looks at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, that's true.
Like, isn't that fascinating though? Because we have an avocado tree in our property and when we are like talking to it, essentially when we come in and we'll say, oh my God, look at the avocados. That's amazing. Like, wow, you're doing such a great job. And then when we had really toxic neighbors on that side, the tree was dying. Wow. And so my husband just randomly one day goes, the tree's hurting. And so we spent more time with the tree and with the mango, with the avocado tree. And then it just thrived.
Oh, it's powerful. There's so much to the elemental world, I think, that we just disregard on a daily basis and don't, pay respect to. And it's amazing when you do, these magical things can happen. And oh, I love it. And I've also heard a lot of people whose plants take energetic hits for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's what your poor little avocado tree
is. I have a snake plant and it had five like stem things and four of them died out of nowhere and one of them was like dying. And so we were like, I wonder if this is a psychic attack. So we brought, like, we did a whole bunch of stuff. We cleansed and we did all the things and did the black salt and we put the one remaining snake plant thing in with another one of a family of happy snake plants, and it's fine. It stopped like dying and decaying, and it, like, I'm looking at it right now, it's like thriving.
Wow.
So I wonder if that, I moved it out of the room that it was in. Yeah.
So did you, apart from it dying, were there any other signs that some other interference was happening? Yes. And so that made you think, oh, maybe this plant's absorbing this for us.
Yeah, we were under a lot of, like, I guess psychic attack from, like, family situations where we decided to not partake in a lot of the family shit that went on.
Yeah.
So we pretty much removed ourselves from the situation and they didn't like that. And so we were getting, like, energetically in our dreams, we were insane and just, like, in the energy that was directed towards us was they wanted us to go down with them, but because we refused to, we like took a step back. And we were like, no, that's not our fight to fight. So
Yeah.
And the snake plant was right near our front door, so it made sense as to like energy coming in.
Yeah,
right. Sure.
Gosh. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Is it my turn already?
Is it my turn?
Yes, it's you. We go off script and it's great, but then it's like, oh, let's get back.
It's me. Oh, but I do want to touch on, because Laura's question about the guardian energy. So you've spoken about the guardian energy outside, but what about in the house? Like, how can we activate?
In the house, I would do the same thing, but I would probably designate a shelf or a specific area, almost like an altar. Mm-hmm. I like to keep it in my kitchen. I actually do have one in my kitchen, and it's, on a windowsill shelf thing. And all it is basically every so often I light a candle, I restate my intention of wanting peace, tranquility, love, all of that, and to thank them for everything they've already done for us within the home.
Mm. Beautiful. Yeah. That intentionality behind it, isn't it? And always, like you're saying, topping it up and keeping it active. Mm.
And what happened one night was I had a friend that came over, and I say friend loosely, and they actually said, I don't feel comfortable in your house. I don't know what it is, but the energy just shifted. And I was like, I looked over to the window and I was like, thank you. And then, they said, I don't know what it is. As soon as I walked in, I just felt this like presence. I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Noted.
Because one of the statements that I say is, anyone that doesn't have true intentions, I don't want them in my home.
So they're not going to be comfortable while they're there, and they're going to be forced out. Mm.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that was the first thing, that because I wasn't too sure of how I felt about this person, but it wasn't enough to be like definitive. It was like, I'm not too sure, but sure, come over, that's cool. And then they came over and they said that, and I was like, oh, okay, so cross that one off my list.
Then you knew.
Knew that was my definitive proof that I needed.
And
I love that.
It was a few years ago now, and I still don't talk to this person, and it's has served in my best interests.
But again, not being too quick to judge, like, is this just something in me? Like, is it, you know, am I projecting, or is it actually, you know, real? So it's nice to have that validation.
Well, something that I can say that has been the best thing for any practice that I've done is, for any spell or ritual that involves another person, I always say in my like incantation, I need, like, in however it fits, but I need it to be revealed to me in an open and honest way. And that person will always, like 100% of the time, say something that proves that how I'm feeling is like legit. So I had a person who was slandering me intentionally but covertly, and so I had done this jar, my jar's over here, and part of it was, I need it to be revealed to me so that I can be sure that this is the right way to go about things. And then the next day she posted, I've completely lost my voice, I can't speak. And this was right after I had done all of this, and my entire incantation was silence her. And it worked. Wow. And the fact that she publicly posted, like, sorry, guys, can't talk, I've lost my voice, I was like, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll keep this one nearby.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
It's so powerful, like, spell work, isn't it? It's so powerful. That's what it makes me laugh when people kind of mock our lifestyle and what we do. And it's like, if you only understood the things that I have witnessed and seen unfold, it is so powerful.
My personal theory when people mock it so much is because they're scared, they don't fully understand it, so they prefer just to denounce it or put it down, because if they were to fully acknowledge it, what would that mean? It would like shift their world entirely, and most people aren't ready to embody that such open-mindedness that everything they've known could be different. So that really comes down to fear. And so, of course, they're going to go, oh, it's a piece of shit.
Yeah. And it would challenge their belief and their identity and everything they stand for.
Yeah, it just keeps them safe.
Yeah.
Although, what's that funny meme? about, you know, people that don't believe, but then if you ask them for a lock of their hair.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, no, you can't have a lock of my hair.
That's right.
Yep.
Now, Ree, is there a particular quote that resonates with you deeply at the moment, and would you mind reading it for our listeners?
Yeah, so there's a Dion Fortune quote that I've read before and then it's come up time and time again, and specifically this year I think I've seen it every day randomly on Instagram, and it is, magic is the art of causing changes to take place in consciousness in accordance with will. And that pretty much touches on exactly what we were just talking about, is our will is so powerful.
Yeah.
And when people don't know it, they fear it.
Mm, so true.
Good one.
Who said that?
Dion Fortune.
Dion Fortune.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's love, like, Dion Fortune.
Spot on. And Ree, as you know, we have a Divine Tool of the Week on the podcast each episode to share with our listeners. So what are you enjoying working with in ritual lately?
So I know I've said this one before on the podcast, but it is my dowsing rods, my copper dowsing rods. Yes. But I have an expansion to it. Ooh. So a friend came to the shop with a spiritual issue the other day, and we actually used a pair each at the same time to see what the results would be. And it was the exact same response to two people facing each other, holding their own respective, like, you know, copper dowsing rods. And we were getting the same responses. And we were just like, oh my God, this is like, I'd never even thought of doing it at the same time. But to have that, because copper rods are pretty, like, I'm holding them up here. Like, they're pretty, like, they'll either open for a yes and close for a no. They're very clear. Mm-hmm. So it was fascinating just to see the clarity in which two people could observe the same response.
Yeah.
Wow. And I've never used dowsing rods before, but I'm intrigued.
Oh, they're the best. I actually had a guy, he's a older man and he's a customer, a customer's dad, and he is obsessed with Tesla and coils and all of the Rife healing machines and all of this stuff. And he actually said to me, he's like, do you want me to make you some to have in the shop? And I was like, oh my God, yes, please. Cause I can't get them anywhere anymore. And the person that made them for me is like so busy making other healing stuff. He doesn't do it anymore. And I was like, oh my God, yes, please. And yeah, it's so much fun.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I need a pair. I need some.
Yeah. It'll be on the next order. I had a question on that. Oh, yeah. So when you said you'd never thought to do it in pairs, so what occurred to you that day?
Well, because the theory, my friend's experience was something that felt really familiar to me. And what she experienced in her dream state, I felt like I had already perceived that in a different, like, dream a long, long time ago. Okay. And so we asked if it was a joint experience. Oh. And then which was a no. And then we pretty much we were like, hang on, what if we just do them at the same time to see if the results are the same? Because we felt like it was the same energy, but it was displayed in different ways in each of our dreams. Mm-hmm. And it gave us the exact same responses for each and every question. And we did it for like half an hour. That's the longest dowsing session I've ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was intense, but it was so great. It was like the whole time we were just smiling, like two little kids, like eating cake. We were like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Well, Shannon and I'll be ordering a set each, no doubt.
Yeah.
We're going to have our own little play date.
Yeah.
Definitely. Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Now, do you have anything brewing you would like to share with our podcast, Coven, and how can everyone find you and your magical work?
Okay, so I don't really have any, I mean, I guess I do. I just started offering astrology readings for your business, like small businesses. So utilizing your own natal chart to look at your unique astrological points of difference to apply to your business strategy. And so it covers social media, your ideal client, making money, like your money house, and like it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've started offering, and people have said it's so profound. I'm like, really? Like, it's just, I love it because I did it for myself and I'm like, hang on, this is a really cool thing to do. Mm. But yeah, as for finding me, I don't know, social media, Spiritual Toolbox, I've got a shop in Sydney. I've got Patreon, School of Magic, where we discuss all the above and more.
Mm.
But yeah, you know, I'm around.
Yeah, you are. Your Instagram's always a great, you know, place to see what you're up to and all of that. And we will provide all those links in the show notes, as you know, and all our listeners have become to know as well. So it's great having you here and joining us and getting to talk about all the things. And
I love it.
Oh, so cool. And we do say it like every time we have you on, we need to go down there and visit you. We still need to go down there and visit
you. We really do.
Not even that far away. It's shameful. Yep. Meet in real life one day.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So cool.
We can all meet up with our dowsing rods.
Oh, my God. Or I could just bring them all. Like,
yeah. Have a douse off.
Yeah. So much fun. That wouldn't look weird in a cafe at all.
No. Not at all.
Oh, I'd love that. Laura and I often laugh, like when we do catch up for coffee or whatever, and the conversations that arise, and then we get to a point where we look around and think, oh my God, wonder what people are thinking at the next table. Yeah. So I can only imagine if the three of us caught up in a cafe, what would happen.
Oh, so fun. Mm. Let's terrify the world.
Yeah, why not? It's just, you know, an extension of the podcast, but to unwilling listeners.
Or maybe you'll get new followers and listeners from it.
You never know. True. You never know. Very it's a weird and wonderful place, this world.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, you go, Laura. You do it.
I think we did it in unison. That was really cute of us.
We did.
Yeah, can't wait to have you on again. I think we've lined up another two episodes at least. So you're so patient with us. And for all our listeners, Ree is so versatile in moving around to times to suit us and everything as well. So you are just, you know, a truly awesome chicken. It is
my pleasure.
We love you. And your knowledge. So it's just incredible. Like we've just scratched the surface. And so for our listeners that are otherwise intrigued as well, definitely hit up Ree's sites and her socials and her Patreon where you can learn all of it. It's super cool. Thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. So much fun.
Pleasure.
And thank you to our podcast coven, and we will be back with you next week.